We are happy to welcome back to the show a very talented comedian, host of the podcast Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, and of course, a former Downtown Madness champion, Paula Poundstone, with us this afternoon. Hello, Paula. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Hey, Rich. Thanks for having me.
We didn't pull you away from throwing that tennis ball to Mo, did we?
No, I'm not yet. not yet. I just got home last night from Comedy Day in Golden Gate Park in San Francisco, and I have not yet begun my tennis ball throwing.
All right, excellent.
You know, did I tell you the story? Was it? I can't remember. Sometime during the stay-at-home order, there was a story that went around the internet where it was a heartwarming dog story, where a man was walking his dog and the man had a seizure and he fell down on the sidewalk and the dog went off the sidewalk onto the street to block traffic to get somebody to come help his, you know, his person. And they did. And it was a heartwarming story. And all I could think of, you know, if I could fall face down into the pavement and my dog would, I would come to with a tennis ball on my back and with mud on it, of course, from his spit, and the dog's face just hanging over me going, are you ready? It was like, you got some rest. Are you ready to throw the ball again?
And I have to ask you, Paula, in listening to the podcast, Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, I'm learning more about how to structure the show properly. And I wonder if we need a grabber here at the beginning to get people.
Oh, the cold open.
Yeah.
Cold open. Oh, it's critical. It's critical in the show business. I've learned this in my experience as a podcaster. You got to grab people right away. I usually do it with a stunt of some sort often.
Wow. I'm trying to think. I'm not great at stunts. I don't know what I can come up with here.
I've climbed a stack of chairs, carefully balanced.
I heard that. That was great.
I think I had a tank of sharks in here one time. I've done some high wire stuff, just, you know, here what I could cherry rig up in my bedroom. It all seems to end in my leg coming off.
And when all else fails, you have Bonnie watching porn.
Yeah. Bonnie Burns, who's a voice. A voice on my podcast, Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, and also is my my manager of 28 years. She sort of joined up on the podcast. It was kind of organic how it happened. But every time I hear her explain something, I shudder that she's been my manager for 28 years, because I never really knew that side of her. I guess it's been good. I was just in Boise a couple nights ago. You know, you don't get Boise without a good structure behind you.
Oh, no, not at all. That's clearly some planning going into that. Well, you're coming back to the Northeast, the Waterville Opera House on September 30th, the Music Hall in Portsmouth on October 1st. How is the road these days? Or is travel, for instance, is it any better now as we begin to emerge from COVID a little bit?
It's great. It's, I'm still getting the pat down pretty regularly, so I feel good about that.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I like to do when they tell you that you're going to get the pat down? I like to put a big smile on my face and say, I know. I'm going to nerve them a little bit. It has changed. Travel has changed. In fact, I almost didn't make it to Boise because there's a new rule that there has to be two jerks on every flight.
Well, that's a rule now. Okay.
We didn't. It's an FAA thing. We almost didn't even take off because we only had one, and so they asked for volunteers, and I raised my hand. I said, I'm not going to put my seat back forward no matter what you say. They said thank you, and then we taxied. Actually, when I flew to San Francisco yesterday, and they were a little bit delayed, but then when we landed, they couldn't get us off because they couldn't work the ramp, you know, the ramp that they pull up to the airplane. Mm. And I thought, you know, I'll bet you that, you know, I feel confident that they check the airplanes themselves on a regular basis. But the lonely ramp, I'll bet you they just, but there's not a lot of ramp inspections, you know. We were on the plane for 40 minutes where they just couldn't make the ramp work. Eventually we parachuted off.
I got scolded on a flight a couple of weeks ago out to Albuquerque because I was seated on the wing in that row, and the flight attendant came to explain the responsibilities of being seated on the wing. And I was reading a book, and she said, "Honey, can you look away from the book for a moment because this is pretty important?" And I thought, you know, I got the ticket for the ride. I didn't plan on having actual duties on the trip.
Oh, yeah. Well, they divvy stuff up now. That's one of the ways they're coping with the business that they lost during the stay-at-home order, is they're divvying up all the work on the plane. For example, in the beginning of the pandemic, scientists believed that that it could be spread from surface transmission.
Right.
You know, remember when we were bleaching our groceries and stuff, and people were leaving, they wouldn't pick up their packages outside their house, and they'd leave it out there for days. This is because people feared surface transmission. And so the airlines started, when you get on the airplane, they still do it. They give you a little, stand there with a little basket of wipes, and people get on, and they start cleaning their seat, and they clean their tray table. Well, they've known now for a couple of years that it's not transmitted through surfaces. It's airborne. That's how you get it. You get it by breathing, you know, the particulates of somebody else. But now they just want you to clean the plane for them. So now that they see that we will, they're not going to give it up with that. It's like if you go to a restaurant, they just hand you the dishes of the last customer. They look, you know, you can't be sure these are clean unless you do them.
So what you're saying is we're just maybe a step away from them saying, excuse me, Ms. Poundstone, we need you to help out with the coffee service.
That's exactly right. You want to put that magazine down? It's your shift.
We're talking with Paula Poundstone here on Downtown. Josh Gondelman comes on our show rather frequently. He was doing a couple of shows here in Maine this past weekend, and I told him I'd do this. So this is not a setup, but as a veteran of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, how would you assess Josh's skills on the show?
Josh has really taken to it like a fish to a cement mixer. He has, he's terrific. I was on once with him, I think. And he was terrific. I think he even won when we were on, although saying that someone won there when they were on with me is not necessarily a high bar. But he was very funny and very fun. He was an excellent panelist. And, you know, it's true that a lot of people become excellent panelists, but Josh seemed to, you know, right off the bat, he was an excellent panelist. So by the time I work with him again, he's going to be an excellent, excellent panelist.
All right, I want to see if you can get inside the head of those people who have been in some sort of leadership position in the past. If, let's say, hypothetically, you had borrowed a whole lot of top secret government documents, where would you keep them in your home?
Ooh, good question. Well, I have a worm farm now.
Oh.
And they'd get eaten. The worms would eat them. And then they'd have to interrogate the worms, and that's not easy.
because they're notoriously tight-lipped.
Yeah, they are. They're hard to work with because getting the saddles on them, their saddles are very small. Yeah, that's a good question. I'm in my bedroom/office right now, and I'm staring at my filing system. You know what? If you put them on my desk, nobody would ever find them. Trump should have thought of that, but I think he has a very neat desk. It was funny to hear that, you know, of course, every every time he does something horrible, which is, you know, every day, his sons, you know, go on some remote cable show or something and start belly aching about it, about, you know, when people recognize that he's done something awful again and they defend him. So Eric was on the other day and he kept saying, you know, he would never leave them on the floor like that. Didn't seem to understand that wasn't the crime he was being accused of. It wasn't being accused of being messy. That wasn't the crime. But apparently there was a lot of strictness surrounding, you know, clean up your room in their house, because they all were just outraged. They're not outraged that he looks, you know, that he's allegedly a seditionist, or that he's, you know, allegedly. what's that word when you, you know, steal secret material? They're not outraged about anything else, just the allegations of messiness, right. Pulling the family apart.
Right. I mean, look, we'll put up with a little treason and espionage, but we will not abide lack of neatness and organization.
Yeah, exactly. You know, one of the first probably pieces of evidence, they'll just bring in his underwear drawer right into court. So, Your Honor, do you see how carefully? Do you see the folding? Do you see?
I would have to look away at that point. Have you followed any of the events surrounding the death of Queen Elizabeth? Are you interested in the royals at all?
You know, I was in the beginning, and now I feel it's destroying American viewing opportunities. I don't mean of the body. I mean of television. I mean no disrespect here, but for heaven's sakes, put her in the ground. I just, the ceremony that's gone on so long around it, and the thing is, they keep on American television, they keep interviewing, it, like, maybe people with dual citizenships or something. They keep interviewing, you know, Brits that are over here, because they can, and that, you know, they keep asking them just, you know, to tell their queen experiences. And then they say stuff like, it was incredible. They'll be like, I was in a crowd of people. She walked by. It was incredible. Like, okay, you know what? That's not incredible. That's just very credible. It's very possible that could happen. I mean, not anymore because she's dead. But before, or they'll say, you know, she. I remember she moved her hand. That was amazing. Some station. There was MSNBC. Interviewed somebody the other day that was a chief of protocol for some president, and so the woman had been, you know, at some event where the queen was in the capacity of her work, and again they kept talking about how incredible, and the woman told the story that, like, she told it like you were supposed to be on the edge of your seat over it. She said then she walked towards me, and you know, and then I realized she was coming towards me, and she said, "Who are you?" and I told her my name, and she said, "Well, what do you do?" And I said, "I'm a chief of protocol." And she said, "Oh, that must be a very hard job." Wow. Oh, I said, "She's never been the conversationalist we've been told. That's amazing." Yeah, I'm sorry for the family and for the, you know, for the British people, but here in America, we're ready to go back to regular programming.
Absolutely. Well, Paula, I hope you are treated like living royalty when you're here in May in the Waterville Opera House on September 30th. As always, great to talk with you. Thanks for making time for us today, and we'll catch you again soon.
Thank you so much, Rich. It was nice talking with you. I'm always treated like living royalty when I go to the Waterville Opera House. They put something really heavy on my head, and I can't lift it after that.
Whatever it takes. We all have our unique approach to treating royalty properly. Thank you, Paula.
Take care.